The scripture reading today comes from the Gospel of Luke. It's the beginning of the New Testament. Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John all have some version of Jesus' ministry. And today we share from the 24th chapter of Luke, one of these stories that tries to hint at the resurrection of Jesus.
But on the first day of the week, at early dawn, they came to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, and they went in, and they did not find the body.
While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground, but the men said to them,
"Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but he's risen. Remember how we told you while he was still in Galilee that the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners, be crucified, and on the third day rise again?"
Then they remembered his words. And returning from the tomb, they told all this to the 11 and to all the rest.
Now it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the other women with them who told this to the disciples. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them.
But Peter got up and ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in. He saw the linen cloths by themselves. Then he went home, amazed at what had happened. The word of God.
For the people of God.
Thanks be to God.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I welcome you if you're tuning in on the radio or our Facebook congregation. Glad you're a part of us. Have you ever heard a true story that was so weird it made reality sound stranger than fiction? I know I have. I mean, it's like the part that really rings true is more odd than anything made up. And when you hear a story like that, we're tempted to kind of shake our heads and say, you know, it's just like, it's too good to be true. So this week, I was online. I went to the website of Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum. I don't go there that often, okay? It's full of stories, many kind of human interest, kind of feel-good stories that you read and you kind of want to say, no way that really happened like that. I mean, like, take this Ripley story online. Violinist plays during his own brain surgery. Might sound too good to be true. What do you think? It's right here. Roger Frisch, a solo violinist from Minnesota, had a hand tremor that prevented him from playing his violin. So the doctors performed an awake surgery on his brain while he played. It's right here in Ripley's Believe It or Not. Don't you believe it? Sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction, but that story can hold a deeper truth that we carry in us. You know, a lot of us in this room follow a rather weird story called The Resurrection, about the dead not staying dead. I say, if you're somebody who follows Jesus at all, it's best if we look for the resurrection story breaking out, because it has a way of showing up in the weirdest of places. You know, this time of year, my mind goes to a story that lights me up, even more than violinists having brain surgery, about what happened in a bar one Easter weekend back in the rural roads of northern Iowa. I believe that the source is credible, as I heard it from the pastor who was serving in that community at the time, a guy named David Zwanziger. You'll want to remember that name for a minute. David Zwanziger. I want to tell you his story right now. It starts with David Zwanziger, who got graduated out of seminary, kind of pastor training school, and he's serving in his first church where he's been assigned to the little church in Black Hawk, Iowa, small rural town. Now, something that happens when you're a new pastor somewhere is suddenly your schedule fills up really quick. You're busier than you thought you would ever be. Because he's trying to meet families, going to people's homes, attending the Kiwanis and Rotary Clubs and get to know people in the community, and just really trying to figure out what's expected of him. So Pastor David Zwanziger thought he's going to have all the time in the world to get ready for Lent and Holy Week and that all-important Easter Sunday morning. But I tell you, before he knew it, it was Holy Week. And Easter Sunday was coming like a freight train, and he'd not written a sermon. So he stole a few moments here or there. He'd be writing on the side and doing research as best he can. And then Holy Saturday came, the day before Easter. He'd been in his study all morning, and he emerged from his study and announced to his wife he had a very good sermon. "Behold, it is very good," he told his wife. And she rolled her eyes and said, "Oh, so you're pleased with your Easter sermon, huh? So what's it about?" He said, "Well, I took some ideas from the great theologian Paul Tillich, you know, where he talks about the new being and how in the resurrection there is no longer estrangement from the authentic self. And if we humans would just accept our acceptance, new life would begin." "Okay," his wife said, but he wasn't listening. He was still talking. "Oh, you know, I preached a version of this back in seminary to a group of my classmates. They thought it was great." "I figured, hey, if it worked back then, it'll work here." That was Holy Saturday morning. Later that afternoon, Pastor David Zwanziger took the family car and drove a few miles over to the church because the youth group were rehearsing for the sunrise service. Their part in it was going to be really great, and David wanted to support the youth. About the end of that rehearsal, one of the kids in the youth group came up to him, a kid named Tiny. The youth group had named him that because he was in the ninth grade and already 6'5". Tiny said to Pastor David, "Pastor David, hey, I thought my parents would come and pick me up after the rehearsal, but they can't come. Could you give me a lift home, please?" Pastor David said, "Well, you know, I guess I'll get Tiny, but I don't know where you live." "Well, that's okay, Pastor David. I know where I live. It's way out at the end of Pleasant Ridge. I'll guide you there." "Okay," said David, still a little skeptical, because he'd not yet been in that part of the county. So just like that, pastor and student get in the car. They drive several miles west out of town. Just as the evening sunset sky, the last streaks of light are fading into night. It was pitch black by the time David let off Tiny at his house. Turned around and proceeded to come back to town on his own, trying to remember the directions, but not having the benefit of MapQuest or cell phones that were not invented yet. And he managed to make a series of wrong turns until he made one more turn on a dirt road that didn't have any signs, and he heard his car engine wheezing as it began to stall, and he looked down and saw the gas gauge that was way below the E and realized, "Oh my gosh, I meant to get gas earlier today." He coasted to the roadside. Pastor David felt just an enormous wash of anxiety come over him. Here it was, Holy Saturday night, about 10 o'clock. He was out of gas. He didn't know where he was. He was lost. And his wife didn't know where he was, and he was expected to be at church at 6:30 the next morning for sunrise. He got out of his car, and he did what most of us in this room would do. He kicked his tire as hard as he could and shouted out a choice four-letter word into the night sky. And then he proceeded to walk in the dark and walk. 30 minutes later, he came to a fork in the road where two dirt roads came together, and he thought he saw some light coming over the hill there to the right, so he headed in that direction and broke into a jog. Oh, he wanted to get home. As he got closer to the source of the light, he stopped and could see it was a bar. No other buildings around it, just a bar. As he got a little closer, he could make out the letters on the corroded neon sign, "The Boondocks Bar." and his heart sank. Because even him, being kind of new in the community, even he knew about the Boondocks Bar. It was the seediest tavern in the whole county. Police reports were in the paper all the time about police breaking up a fight or a drug deal at the Boondocks. As he got closer, he saw this collection of old rusty cars and pickups parked kind of close to the bar. Oh, great. As he rounded the building, he came where his eyes laid on six shiny motorcycles, a couple of them chopped, all of them with gang insignias in the gas tank. This was not his night. He took a breath, said his best quick prayer, and as he approached the front door to go into the bar, he could hear a Merle Haggard tune coming from the jukebox on the other side. And loud voices and shouting in there. He pushed the door open and was instantly awash with the smell of stale beer and cigarette smoke. He walked in just a couple of feet and looked around, letting his eyes adjust to the smoky atmosphere. And he didn't recognize anyone there, no surprise. And he wondered what the good people of his church would think about him being in the Boondocks on Holy Saturday night. He started walking toward the bartender across the way, and as he did, he realized every eye in that house was on him, trying to figure out who he was. He wasn't one of them. Soon enough, they didn't recognize him. They went back to their drinking and card playing. As he approached the barkeep said, "Yeah, what do you have? We got a whiskey. You got a special going on whiskey right now." Well, he knew what he wanted to say, maybe a shot of whiskey or a ride home or both. But he found himself saying, I'll just have a Coke, man. Bartender frowned. Evidently, not many people ordered soft drinks at the Boondocks. He was trying to get his bearings still. And looking around, he saw over in the corner of the bar over that way was a big table. Several men in leather jackets sitting around talking really loud, drinking. Some of them were playing pool at the pool table next to him there. David walked over just to kind of watch the game and figure out who he might ask for a lift into town. Soon enough, though, that pool game was over. Somebody who'd been noticing him watching came up and thrust a cue stick in his hand and said, "Hey, man, maybe you can play the next game." And just like that, David Zwanziger was in the midst of a pool game with bikers. Well, you need to realize something. In the Zwanziger home, as David was growing up, his father sold sporting equipment. And they always had a rather nice pool table in their den. And David had been taught how to play pool by his dad starting at age 6. I want you to know, he was pretty good, but this night he was very good. I mean, it was one of those times where it seems like everything just went in. He cleared the table from the break twice. Finally, the guy he was playing said, "Hey, man, you shouldn't be playing me. You ought to be playing Turk." "Hey, Turk!" shouted across the long room and over that corner where the men in leather jackets were. And out from the midst of that corner table came a very stout fellow, about 5'8", about 270 pounds, carrying his own cue stick in that little case. Now, maybe you should never want to play somebody who carries their own cue stick in its case. The fellow in the leather jacket took the jacket off, revealing tattoos all up his neck. Gingerly and gently put together his cue stick from the case and grumbled, "Set him up." Turk was a good pool player, but this night, David was better. After 3 games, the guy in the leather jacket slapped the young preacher on the back and said, "You got me on this one, Shark. Why don't you come over to my table and buy you a beer?" David realized a couple of things had just happened. He had somehow endured a socially awkward moment, and he had been given a new name, Shark. He walked down, joined the corner table. Conversation was easy enough, but soon enough, the inevitable question came. So what do you do, shark? He wondered, should I tell the truth or should I lie? Lying seemed like it could be easier. But it was Holy Saturday night after all. I'm a pastor at the little church over in Black Hawk, he said. There was stunned silence around the table, as you can imagine. Finally, started being some giggles, some outright laughing, jokes made. Ho-ho! We got a preacher with us tonight. Hey, got a guy here who makes house calls. That's pretty good. Why don't we put a cross on the pool table? We'll call the place St. Boondocks. I bet it'll bump up business. Finally, a voice sounded over all the others. Oh, shut up. It was Turk. Maybe some of us want to talk religion. We got a preacher who's shown up here. When is that ever going to happen again? And just like that, the atmosphere at that corner table changed. As one by one, the men in the leather and tattoos went around the table and started telling a little bit of their stories. Some of them had been to church as kids. A couple of them even confirmed, but all of them confessed they hadn't been to church in years and years. Some of them said that church folk shown outright contempt for them before. They didn't think they'd want to go to any church they knew about. Finally, it was Turk's turn. Me? I ain't ever been to church. I ain't ever been. See, my mom never got married. People in my community kind of made it known to her that she probably wouldn't fit in to the churches around us. Yeah, you know, I ain't ever been to Sunday school. I think the only thing I ever heard about the Bible is from TV preachers. And, you know, I've seen that movie, Ten Commandments, maybe 3 or 4 times on late night. Some of you guys here have been saying something about Easter or something, Easter. Hell, I don't even know what Easter is. There was silence, and eyes slowly turned to the other end of the table where the young pastor sat. Pastor David Zwanziger realized in that moment he was being given the clearest invitation to speak he would likely ever have. Should he tell them about the new being and estrangement from the authentic life? He took a deep breath, looked around at the group looking at him, and began. Well, it all kind of starts when a baby is born in a little town about 2,000 years ago. His mother was not married at the time. And later, when he grew up to be a preacher, people kind of held that against him, thinking that God could not really speak through somebody who had such questionable beginnings. But it was clear God did speak through this man. David looked up, wondering if they were with him. They were still with him. He continued. So this guy, Jesus was his name, grew up and lived in these towns and villages, traveling from town to village, actually. He was kind of known as being a really wise teacher, and some say he even healed people. And the strange thing was, is the people who were kind of rich and powerful didn't warm up to him so much. It seemed to be the people that upstanding society called the sinners and the losers who seemed to be interested in Jesus, and he seemed to have an interest in them too. He told stories that were full of surprises, because often in his stories, it would be that the person you would least think got it was the person that was God's best friend. Over time, his popularity grew. And he lived up in a country called Israel. He lived up in the northern part of that. It's kind of real country, not much happening up there. And he decided after 3 years of his teaching, he'd head down to the great big capital city called Jerusalem. Some called it a holy city. So he came into the holy city on a day that some of us call Palm Sunday. to the cheers of so many people, people who had heard about him already and his ways. They gathered. Some of them ripped off branches off of trees and kind of waved it at him and put some in the path for him. I mean, man, it was like the kind of cheer welcome that you'd give the winners of the Super Bowl. That was on a Sunday. As his popularity grew, so did the opposition from the powerful in the community. They didn't like what felt like he was rocking the boat. They decided to go after him. And so they managed to convince one of his own followers, a guy named Judas, to tell them where they could find Jesus alone and unprotected. So on Thursday of that week, when he was in a city park by himself, soldiers came and they arrested him. And they took him to a court. And it was a court all corrupt, kangaroo court, where people had been telling lies because the people who wanted him out of the way would do anything to get him out of the way. They found some charges that would stick. And through some manipulation of everything, they had him sentenced not just to jail, but to die. Once the sentence was given, some of the soldiers pushed him around, slapped him, put on some purple robe, kind of mocking him, saying, "Oh, so you're king of the Jews, ha ha." And then they laid him down and they put a nail through his hands and his feet onto a wooden cross. This was called crucifixion. It was a way to die that the Romans had come up with. It was a form of punishment that was saved for the greatest enemies of the state. Sometimes crucifixion would take several days before someone would die from it. But that's what they did to him. So after what some would be thought was going to be a long time, it took just 3 hours, and this kind, peace-loving man died at the hands of his murderers. They pulled him down off that cross, and just a few of his followers had stayed with him that long, a few of the women and one of his guy companions, and a kind stranger they didn't even know came forward and said they could put his body in a small cave that kind of doubled as a tomb for safekeeping. David took a sip of his Coke and paused, wondering, was he saying too much? Was he boring the table of bikers? But he looked, and they were still with him. It was as attentive of a crowd around him as he'd ever seen. So he decided to wrap it up, saying, "Now, that was on a Friday. What I'm telling you just happened. Saturday came and went. Sunday morning came. The women who had been friends of Jesus, a woman named Mary, his own mother, and then another woman named Mary Magdalene that some had rumored had been a prostitute earlier in her life. They came to that cave because they just wanted to be near the body of that man who had meant so much to them and pay respects as best they could. But even though soldiers had been guarding that little cave, when they rolled the stone, they noticed nothing was in it. There was no body there. Jesus' body was missing. They didn't know what to make of that, so they were kind of a mix of, should they feel relief? Should they feel terror? Because they were filled with both. They went running out of that cemetery. And pretty soon after that, there was some presence of some glistening being that came before them and said, "Don't fear. I'm come to tell you, Jesus is not dead. He's alive." They screamed, they ran faster, trying to get to the other disciples. Somewhere along the way, they had an experience with the living Christ who said to them, "It is true, I'm not dead. Go as you are and tell my disciples who are in hiding that I'm going to meet with them and tell them what we're going to do next." At that point, Turk slammed his beer bottle on the table and said, "Stop right there, shark. Are you telling me this Jesus still was willing to meet with those slimy disciples who'd run out on him when he needed them most?" "Yeah, that's true, Turk, it is. Jesus had this way of looking for the best in others, and he never used force to get his points across. "Huh," said Turk. "That is a crazy story, Shark." "Yeah, you're right. Ours is really a crazy God. Our God turns losing into winning. And because of the way Jesus lived, holding on to seeing the best in other people, when God raised him from the dead, it was God's way of saying, his way right there, that's my way." Huh. There were a couple of questions and comments around the table, some beers to finish, but it was obvious the conversation was really winding down about now. So Pastor David looked at his watch and said, "Oh my gosh, it is so late. I have so got to get out of here, guys. My wife doesn't even know where I am." Started telling about the car broke down, is out of gas. Turk said, "Hey, no problem, Shark. I got a siphon." And they went out back, and through some means I'm not sure of, with a visit with someone's pickup truck, managed to come up with a can of gas, stuck him on the back of one of those chopped motorcycles, and headed out into the dark night, finding his car, and they gave him very clear directions on how to get to town. Now, during all this time, David's wife had been back home worrying sick. She didn't know where her husband was. What is the deal? He burst into the house with this glow and this smell of cigarettes and beer on him. He said, "Honey, you'll never believe what happened to me tonight." And she did not. "Whatever you have been doing, you get to bed right now. The biggest Easter, the biggest day of the church year is tomorrow, your first Easter. You and I are going to have a talk tomorrow. For now, you just get to bed. I'll be on the couch. And better yet, you be on the couch." He said, "No, I can't go to bed. I got to rewrite my sermon. If it won't preach at the Boondocks on a Saturday night, it will not preach in church on Easter morning." He went into his study, and he stayed up the rest of the night making a new sermon. And the next day, what do you think he talked about? You think he talked about the new being in our liberation from the inauthentic self? Yeah. He simply talked about the life, death, and resurrection of God's anointed one, and how everyone who came in contact with that story received new life. So church happened on Easter Sunday morning there in Black Hawk Church. People talked about how the service was really uplifting. The choir did a great job. They said the sermon was pretty good. But what really got the people talking that morning was the six shiny motorcycles that were parked right up at the front door of the church. And this group of men who came in a little bit late, came and sat in the front pew here because it was all that left, and all of them kind of wearing suit jackets. It kind of fit them kind of weird. Well, the usher really wanted him to feel welcome and came down, was giving him bulletins and saying, "Hi, really glad you're here. You know, we have coffee hour afterwards. You know, do you know anyone in the church you're friends with?" About that time, the biggest guy over at the end, who seemed to be the most uncomfortable in his suit jacket, looked up and said, "Heck yeah, we're friends of Sharks." And I say to you, thanks be to God, who manages to bring a story of new life to the most unsuspecting of places, and in Jesus Christ manages to make a way out of no way. Amen.